Parshas Vayishlach is about the encounter, the fateful encounter between Yaakov and Esav. And the Parsha begins, Vayishlach. Yeah, Parshas Vayishlach. And the Parsha begins with Yaakov Avinu trying to appease his brother. He employs diplomatic measures, which in the Middle East means giving gifts. He employs the spiritual preparations, which means praying and obtaining Hashem's grace. And he prepares for war. And on the last night before the encounter, he crosses the Yabok River. And the Torah tells us in chapter 32, verse 24, Vayikochem Vayavirem es anochal. He took them and he brought them over the river, or the brook. Vayaved es asher loy. And he brought across everything that was his. Rashi says, es asher loy, everything that was his. What does this mean? First it says, vayikochem, vayavire. He took them, and he transferred them. And then it says, vayave, and then he transferred. So Rashi says, after he transferred his family, his wives and his children, so then he transferred Habehima Vahmetautlin. Then he transferred his possessions. Rashi says something very interesting. What does it mean he transferred? How do you transfer things? You transfer people. How do you transfer objects? How do you do that? You transfer livestock. How do you do the transfer? So Rashi says, Osa Atzmei Kegesher. He made himself like a bridge. Neitel Mikan. He took from one side and brought to the other side. Does that mean that Yaakov didn't move at all? That it was just a very, very small but deep brook? Or does it mean that Yaakov actually took things, was able to walk through the brook? It was only about 5 or 6 feet deep. He was able to walk through it, take things from one side and the other? We don't know exactly, but that's what it says. Our sages tell us in the Bereishis Rabbah, they made himself kegosher, like a bridge. So Yaakov bridged the two sides, and in doing so, he brought everything across the river. The Ramban takes time to explain that Yaakov first checked out the depth of the water. First he walked in it himself, and he brought things himself, and after he realized that there was no danger and it wasn't too deep, that's when he proceeded to get everybody else to cross from one side to the other. Ramban also says, he clearly says, even though Rashi doesn't spell it out, that first he brought his family across, and only after he brought his family across, then he took Miknehu, his livestock, and Rechushe. All right. It's a safe crossing. Everybody is now on the other side. There's now one more barrier between him and between Esav, namely the Yabok River. Not so fast. The Torah says, Vayivaser Yankiv Levadai. And then Yaakov is left on the north shore by himself. And the Torah says that being left there alone, Vayayovek ish imay. Some phantom man came and wrestled with him. Ad alois hashochar. Until day broke. What's going on here? Why did Yaakov stay alone? Here he had a whole family and livestock and residuals. He was bringing them across the river. And all of a sudden, Yaakov is alone. How did this happen? So Rashi answers the question. And he says, shochach pachim ktanim. He left behind a few small baubles, whatever, a few small instruments, vessels, artifacts. V'chozer aleihem. And therefore, after everybody had already crossed, Yaakov went back to retrieve that which he had forgotten. Rabbeinu Bechaya has a little bit of a different way of explaining it. He says, Yaakov was standing at the banks of this tributary of the Jordan River. And he directed all of the traffic. And then when he finished directing all the traffic and getting everybody across, he was the last one behind. So it's not as he went back, but he was there, and he's the only one who didn't cross yet. Like the captain was the last one to leave the sinking ship. Yaakov made sure to direct all the traffic until he was the only one left behind. Now the truth is, Rabbeinu Bechaya's answer seems a little bit more palatable than Yaakov went back because he forgot a few tchotchkes. Like, really? Because this was this, you're worried about your life, you're worried about tomorrow's faithful encounter, you're missing a few little things. Like, the whole thing is strange. But the thing is that Rashi is forced to explain to us, because it says Vayikocham Vayavirim, and then Vayaver, that Rashi didn't, he didn't just direct traffic. It seems he actually brought things across. So if he brought things across the river, that's why Rashi leans on the Medrash that says that he was Otsasme Kagosher, that he made himself like a bridge. So if he made himself like a bridge, even when the last one was across, he shouldn't be on the north shore, he should be on the south shore at least, or in the river. How did he end up on the north shore? So therefore, we must say that he actually went back. At any rate, he went back, he was alone, and suddenly somebody jumped him. Rashi says, Vaye Ovik, that this person, this phantom, wrestled. What does it mean, Vaye Ovik? Says Rashi, Menachem Pirish, Menachem explained, Vayis Aperish, he wrestled. Meloshon Ovik V'Ofer, but this term actually comes from dust. Shahayamailim Ofer, they were kicking up a lot of dust, but Aglehem with their feet. This was not a paved surface. There was a surface was of soil, and because they were wrestling with such great force, they kicked up a lot of dirt. Valyadei ni'unam, and through their wrestling moves, and because they were pushing each other and shoving each other, that's why it kicked up dirt. Rashi says, to me it seems that the word vayyovek, which means wrestle, is not a permutation of what was going on the ground, but rather a description of how they were actually wrestling. Rashi says, to me it seems, shehu loshein vayiskasher, that it comes from the term of connecting. And he says, actually, this is not a common phraseology in Hebrew, but it is found fairly commonly in Arami, in the Aramic language. And that's, for example, there's a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin on page 63 that says this, Basar da aviku bei, after they became connected, so that's when things, the next thing happened. Or in the Gemara in Menachos on page 42, which speaks about tzitzis, and you have to tie the tzitzis onto the garment, and it says, Va'avik le mevak. So that's clearly l'shein aniva. This comes from the terminology of a knot. Excuse me. So therefore, Shekein Derech Shnayim, Shemitz Amtsim, you have two people who each one is trying to gather their strength. Lahapil Isha Seyeyu, each one is trying to throw the other one down. Shechoivkoi, that you would hug. Va'oivkoi, and you would grab or lock. Bezroyev, with your hands. So therefore, the word Vayeyovik is not about the details, the side details, the side effects of dust being kicked up, but it describes the actual wrestling. They were locked in wrestling. So who was this guy? Okay, whatever. We know he was wrestling. The question is why the Torah describes it as a vayavik. Rashi says they were very tightly engaged. Who is he? Rabbi Seinu said, Shehu Sarei Shel Esav. This is the alter ego, the spiritual alter ego of Esav himself. Everybody has a malach, and Esav's malach came to vanquish Yaakov before he got to fight with the physical Esav. So Yaakov had to fight first with the spiritual alter ego of Esav before he could face off with the actual Esav. According to the Rashbam, this was an angel who was sent from the heavens, and it was not necessarily the guardian angel of Esav, but rather Hashem did not want Yaakov to run away. Hashem wanted Yaakov to face his fears. He wanted him to engage with Esav and once and for all put an end, it wouldn't be for all, but at least be for once. Yaakov would lock horns, not run away, not hide behind his mother's skirts, deal with it for real. And therefore Yaakov is planning to escape, and the Malach said, you're not going nowhere. You're staying right here till Esav comes. Rabbeinu Bechaya has an interesting take. He kind of is a middle ground between Rashi and between Rashbam. He says, yes, it was a guardian angel, it was Esav's angel. But no, it wasn't here for Esav's benefit necessarily, any more than Yaakov's benefit. He wanted, the guardian angel wanted this encounter to take place. So according to Rashbam, it was from heaven. It was a good thing for Yaakov. According to Rabbeinu Bechaya, it was more about something, you know, in order for Esav maybe to win. That's why Esav angels forced it. Rabbeinu Bechaya also suggests that it might have been Malach Gavriel, and this is a Malach of judgment, and perhaps that would make sense, that Malach of judgment, of severity, came to judge or force or coerce Yaakov to face his fears. Don't run away. Deal with it. Now, with regard to Yaakov Avinu being left alone, the explanation that we're getting here, for the most part, most of the Sharanim follow Rashi's approach, that the reason he stayed there was because of Pachim Ketanim. It doesn't make Yaakov look very magnanimous. It doesn't make him look very big-minded. It makes him look rather small. A small, little provincial fellow, worried about a few tchotchkes. Doesn't want to lose anything, you know. People would say, "Ah, he's like a cheap Jew, you know, he's running after all these little things." But conversely, we have an extraordinary medrash which frames this business of Ayavasa Yaakov Levadai not as a small person who was concerned with a few bubbles, with a little tchotchkes, but rather with an expression of the highest level of spiritual communion with God. If you open your Yerushalmi book to page Kufyutes, I'm going to introduce you here to an extraordinary medrash that's found in the Bereishis Rabba. Page Kofiotes. Simen Tezayin. In the medrash, it says in this pasuk, Vayivasar Yainkev Levadai. The emphasis here is Levadai. He was left. If he had others, he wouldn't have been in trouble. The problem was he was alone. That was the problem. Yaakov's aloneness is the issue. He was alone, and somebody jumped him. So he had to fight, and nobody could come help him. Maybe he screamed. Nobody came. Nobody heard him. So Yaakov is there alone, all night, wrestling, until the day breaks. So the Medrash says, Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kosuv Boi V'Niskav Hashem Levadai. What does it say about Hashem, about God, in the final days, in the moments when Mashiach arrives? So the prophet Yeshayo, in his second chapter of prophecies, he says that then when Mashiach will come, the niskav Hashem levadai, God will rise above all else. Everybody will see the aloneness of God, meaning how God is great, how God is beyond. Now people think that God contends with other forces. People are not sure if they should pray to God or pray somewhere else, if they should give in to God or give in to something else. But when Mashiach will come, it will emerge that everything else is eclipsed and only the presence of Hashem will be known. And it says, V'niskav Hashem levadai. And the Medrash says, that sounds pretty intense, right? Like God's supremacy, God's dominion becomes clear for all. And the Medrash says, Af Yankev, so also with Jacob. V'yivasa Yankev levadai. In other words, Jacob had a godlike moment. As God will be alone, visibly alone, when Mashiach comes, Jacob was alone, visibly alone, on this night before the encounter. So this is a paradox. It's a paradox because in the Gemara and in the Medrash Rabbah, which Rashi quotes, it says differently. There it says, Nishtayer al Pachim Ketanim. He was left behind. He went back even because he had some little things. And the Gemara says, Mikan letzadikim. From here we can see that amongst the righteous, Choviv aleihem amenim yesem migufam. They're more worried about the material residuals than they are even about their physical or material health. Yaakov risked his life. He risked his welfare to be able to bring home a couple of bucks. He was going to lose something of value, a few small items.
What was the risk?
Like being alone at night in a wilderness. You don't know. Could have been a bear. Could have been a lion. Turned out it was an angel. I mean, could have been anything. Alone, being alone in a dark place at night is generally not an advisable thing to do. Right? That's the thing. Where would you like to be in the middle of the night? Not in a dark alleyway alone. It's a good neighborhood. It's a bad neighborhood. I'm not interested in being alone. People don't want to be alone. But Yaakov was alone. Why was he alone? Before, he's got a big family, lots of kids. He's got the human resources there to help him. And here he is staying alone. And why is he alone? Because he's worried about a few bucks. So this is a paradox. On one hand, Yaakov seems to be viewed in the highest, the most loftiest way. So, V'nizkar Hashem levadai, God is alone, Yaakov is alone. We're talking about the highest level of spiritual achievement. It's as if Yaakov is set apart from all else. This is the moment when Yaakov really, when his star rose, when his greatness became clear for all. He's levadai. He's unparalleled. He's peerless. Yaakov levadai. As we speak about God, when Mashiach comes. And conversely, we're talking about a small-minded provincial fellow who is worried about a couple of tchotchkes. He's worried about, I left a few things of value. I don't want to lose. I lost enough money giving my diplomatic gift to Esav. I'd rather not lose anything else. And the Rebbe says, Bepashtos, if you speak about this on a seemingly literal level, Shnei Pirushim Elu, Minugodim Zel Lezel Lachlutin, these two interpretations seem to be entirely paradoxical to one another. Lefi ha-medrash, according to the medrash, metayr akosov es yankev bedagar nailos meid, the Torah describes in extraordinary terms the greatness of Yaakov. That Yaakov, at this point, was bedugmas ha-matziv ba'achras ha-yomim. Yaakov was like in the time that the world will be just before Mashiach comes on the eve of the redemption. That it says about this, V'nizkav Hashem levadei b'yoy mahu. On that day, Hashem will be alone. Ve'ilu lufi ha-gemara. But according to the Gemara, which we just found in Rashi as well, ha-posuk metayer keitzed yankev nishtayer. We hear about Yaakov staying behind. On the other side, on the north side of the Avok River, a tributary of the Jordan. And all of this is kedei lahavi pachim ktanim. Because he wants to bring these few items home. This is not the royal jewels. This is not something of tremendous value. It says pachim ketanim, small things. Not so valuable, not so special. So why did Yaakov go back then? Whatever, it was like, they're worth a few dollars. So the Rebbe says that the truth is that both of these seemingly counterintuitive and even contradictory interpretations are actually oilim b'kan echad, they dovetail together. They're not as disparate as you think. Not only they're not disparate, in fact, they come together as one. Dafke ha'uvda, she'yankiv ha'bedargas v'nizkav shema shem levadei, because Yaakov is at the level of aloneness, an aloneness that parallels God's aloneness, that's what brought him to be involved in small little items. What does that mean? How and why? So the Rebbe says we must lean here on the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov in Keser Shem Tov in section 218 says the following. The Gemara says with regard to tzaddikim, with regard to extremely pious and righteous members of the Jewish faith, chaviv aleihem ameinam yoseh migufam, their money, their residuals is more important to them than their own welfare. It sounds like a canard, like a Jewish joke. What does this mean? So the Baal Shem Tov explains it. It's not because this tzaddik is worried about another few dollars in his pocket. But it's the fisha b'mamoyne shel Yehudi, because in the residuals, in the wealth of a Yid, yeshnam nitzutzin kadishin hashayochem l'sheirish nishmasi. There are these sparks of holiness. People talk about tikkun olam. It really is a Lurianic term, and it means that when God first created the world, that there was a meltdown of spiritual forces, and there was millions of pieces of spiritual shrapnel that got embedded in the strata of existence. As a rule, there's rapach nitzutzis, what we call 288 major impactful, like sections of shrapnel. And these 288 areas of shrapnel, which are throughout the strata of creation, now have to be elevated. And there's billions and billions of subsparks, like little cells. And every single time one uses the material or physical world for a holy purpose, they release a single spark that was trapped. A tiny micro spark. There's micro sparks that are attached to everything, and we have to release them. How do you release them? How do you allow them to return to sender? By utilizing something for the right, for a good purpose, for a holy purpose. And where is this found more than anything else? The answer is it's found in one's residuals. It's found in one's possessions. It's found in one's money. Therefore, we have a sacred mission. A sacred mission. It's not about, keep the few bucks. It's not about keep the few bucks. If I'm flippant, if I ignore those few dollars, what happens is those few dollars could have been used for a sacred purpose. Those sparks could have been brought home, and instead they were put right back into the mix. And who knows the next time it's going to end up in a righteous wallet? Who knows the next time somebody will have the opportunity to redeem or release the spark? So to you it seems you're being magnanimous. A few bucks, machdish dois, doesn't make a difference, I don't care. But the tzaddik says, what are you talking about? Don't you realize that every single moment of life is valuable? Don't you realize that every encounter is meaningful? Don't you realize that every single iota of value is actually valuable, but not in a material sense. It's valuable in a spiritual sense. And you can accomplish great things with this. Bringing it into the tchum, the scrimmage of Kedusha. Well, the fiyah klal, there is a rule in Kabbalah. And the rule is, kol ha-gaveya gaveya b'yeser, yerded l'mata mata b'yeser. That which is loftiest spiritually ends up in the lowest ebb. One of the simplest examples is if you have a tall wall and the wall collapses, the stones that were on top of the wall will end up furthest away from the actual foundation, right? Because the wall will collapse like this. Or when something falls from a great height, the higher it fell from, the greater the shattering. And that is to say, kol davar nachos yesev malasi. Things which seem less important, less valuable, less meaningful, what you call in the Gemara pachim ktanim, small things, mistatim bei nitzutzis kedusha gevoyim v'nailim yeser. It seems to be meaningless, but actually it's extremely meaningful. Why? Because things are not what necessarily meets the eye. It's not what you think it is. And we are trained to look at things differently. V'lochein nisha yankiv letzedek pachim ktanim. Yaakov Avinu understood that there was value. He couldn't just leave those things behind. Who knows the next time those things would come into the hands of a tzaddik and be ready for repair, ready for return. Could be centuries. For all you know, it could be millennia. So Yaakov felt he has to go back. He risked his life, not for a few bucks, but for the value of small items. K'dei lezachech olahales es nitzutzis hakedusha, in order to elevate, to rarefy the sparks of holiness, hanailim hatmunim bohem, these lofty sparks which are embedded, or actually, so to speak, concealed within them. The thing is this: kedei latzlich bepul azu, in order to succeed at such a mission, lahagia lenitzutzis animtzoyim bemekemes hashvelim vanechusim b'yeser, to reach the sparks that reside in the lowest rungs of existence, yesh tzeirich bekeich miyuchad me'akadosh baruch hu atzmei. This is a big mission, not easy. For this you need a big, big shot in the arm, a lot of extra strength. Where does that strength come from? That comes from the highest levels of Kedusha. That comes from the level of Niska Hashem Shmoy Levadei. The area, the atmosphere in which divinity is seen and appreciated as totally apart and different from everything else. In other words, the Niska Hashem Levadei, God's aloneness is reflected in Yaakov's aloneness, because it is only when Yaakov connects on the deepest level to God and godliness that Yaakov is able to go into the lowest place, find those sparks, and try to bring them home. And now we understand that there actually is no paradox. And the highs and lows of the North Shore were actually one and the same. It's two parts of the same narrative, of the same story. And this also, I think, is a lesson that we could all learn, even though it's a story out of antiquity, of a righteous Jew who worried about a few tchotchkes. The deeper message for us is that we should take everything, every one of our residuals, every moment of our time, take everything seriously, because you never know which spark is going to be the one to tip the scale.